financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham. And I love the shows where we have a guest. And who do we have with us today?
John Sosville, a mergers and acquisition consultant from Platform Brokerage. So welcome, John.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Doing great.
We're well, thanks. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So you have what I would call a very interesting career. Not many people, I would say get to, but not many people have the opportunity to help somebody sell their business. And I asked you to be on the show today, partly because I see clients who have small businesses. I know we always think of mergers and acquisitions as enormous company things, but I have people who have small businesses who sometimes, you know, they don't know what to do as an exit strategy. And they call me and they say, I want to retire. And I think my business is worth, you know, $1 billion, or I don't think my business is worth anything because I'm the only person doing it. So I wanted to bring you on to talk a little bit about those kinds of things, big deals, small deals, what it's like to live a day in the life of John Sosville's shoes. So where do you think we should start, John?
Honestly, the topic in general is pretty interesting to most people, because if you own a business, you generally think about when you're going to sell your business. So to me, it's a great opportunity to work with people, just on the basis that it's usually one of their best days when they sell their business. And also, in a good acquisition, it's one of the best days for the buyer as well, because they're very enthusiastic and excited about what's to come in the future. So it's a really fun and exciting world to live in. And honestly, it's my dream job. So I also get pretty excited about it on a daily basis.
Did you acquire your business from someone?
I did not acquire my business from anyone. We have acquired businesses, but as far as like our brokerage businesses, we built them from the ground up. And most of our operational businesses, we also have built from the ground up. We've made, between me and my partners, we've acquired 3 businesses of the 10 or so that we've operated. So we have experience buying and selling on our own. I've sold a lot more businesses of my own than I have purchased others.
My only reference that I have to this is from Pretty Woman. Richard Gere was in mergers and acquisitions, but there were hostile takeovers.
Yes. Yeah. Richard Gere was involved in a little bigger deals than I usually am. Uh-huh. Mergers and acquisitions advisors and business brokers, you know, there's all sorts and sizes of deals. I tend to work on stuff under 20 million sale price, usually in the ballpark of $1 to $5 million. So it's a more typical small business. And but there's a lot of the same workings that occur, whether it's a really small business or it's a very large business.
Mm-hmm. When you take on a client, is the first thing valuation?
It is. That's generally one of the first things that we do is we provide free valuations. So we have an initial conversation about their business, about their aspirations for the future, that there's a real reason that they want to sell, which to me, the major reasons you want to sell are you're retiring or you're an entrepreneur and you want to move on to your next idea. So I try to make sure that there's a good reason that somebody wants to sell, and then work with them on evaluation. Mm-hmm. From that point, they decide whether they want to move forward.
You know, John, you said that the day somebody sells their business is maybe their best day for both the seller and the buyer. But it also has to be a little bittersweet. As someone who's built his own businesses from the ground up, you understand the heart of an entrepreneur. So do you have a story maybe of a time where you got a phone call after the closing where somebody said, this was the greatest thing, thank you so much. Or, you know what, I'm really having trouble dealing with this. I don't know who I am if I'm not running this company. What do I do, John?
That's a great question. That is a great question, because I've had both of those occasions. So most sellers, they're proud of themselves and they don't really believe that anybody else can operate their business like they could. And that's a good seller. Like when somebody tells me nobody can do what I can do, that's a business I want to sell, because I know that they've really put everything into their business. And so, yeah, I've had a lot of fearful sellers, a lot of people that really didn't believe. And you have to understand, many people that I've sold their business, they hadn't taken a vacation or 10 or 15 years. Every single day was running their business. So it's very much part of them. And it's very scary when they don't have it anymore. And I often get calls of, what do I do with my money? What do I do next? What should I be doing on a daily basis? And a lot of these people are my friends at that point, so they're fun conversations. But yeah, there's many people that get scared in the process. And thankfully, I've had many occasions when people call me and say, I didn't really believe that I could sell my business. I didn't believe that somebody else could step in and run it. And they're just ecstatic that their business is being operated well, that they got out, they got the money that they wanted, and everything in their life is running smoothly. So it is, it's a scary thing, but it's often after the fact they realize they got everything they wanted out of it.
Well, you brought up so many things. You were talking and I was just thinking, well, wait, there's a vacation? Wait, there's a process? Okay. So it does make me think about something. You know, valuing your business and selling your business and finding the right partner and doing all of that is not an overnight thing. And so I could imagine that you would end up doing your job well and collecting friends along the way. When you do transition a business from one owner or one company to another, but when you're doing that and you're hoping that the next person will pick it up and run it well, that transition has to be a difficult one. Can you talk a little bit about how you, you know, how you phrase it to people? Do they have to be a partner? Do they have to just hand it off quickly? What is that process like when somebody is taking over someone else's business?
That's another great question. You must have sold some businesses in the past, Francis. So it honestly, to me, there's two main points in the selling process. And one is that the broker and the seller are on the same page as what the assumed value of the business is. So a good valuation, understanding valuations in the industry that you operate, and then so you get to a point that's reasonable, that the market's going to see you're looking for the right thing. Yes. And then the next piece is what you said, finding a partner. It's truly finding a partner. It's not finding a buyer, because you're going to work intimately with this person. You are both going to have operational responsibilities in the transition. And post-transition, a good seller is still involved with the buyer's life. They're making sure that the buyer has a good experience, has a good ramp to launch themselves into the new business, and has the ability to create their own relationships with the clients of the business. So the partnership to me is the most important part. And finding, look, there, every person has a different person that should be their partner. So that matchmaking is, to me, the most critical point of the sale and of the broker's job.
Cue the fiddler on the roof. Okay.
Do you find that with your clients that they're usually pretty accurate on the valuation, or is it similar to like a home when the seller always thinks their house is worth more than it actually is or less?
It's very much all over the board, right? I think it's very rare that people actually have an accurate understanding of the value of their business. Mm-hmm. Most people overvalue their business, but it's pretty surprising how many people are completely surprised by the value that I can tell that we're going to be able to get. I have a buyer right now, or a seller right now, that's we just did a valuation on. And he just said to me, he's like, I can't believe we can get that much for our business.
That's
and,
awesome.
And he's like, I honestly wouldn't sell until you told me we can get that much. So it is, those are the ones that I love, honestly, right? It's like, it's easier to tell somebody that their business is worth more. But most people, when it comes to selling, they end up at a reasonable place.
If they do overvalue, though, how do you navigate that?
It's difficult, right? Because much like having children, I mean, this is something that people have spent every moment of their day working on. Mm-hmm. They see the value that they put into it. They see the money that they put into the equipment that they use for the business. And so there's so many aspects to a seller as far as how they come up to the value, where somebody valuing the business, you're mostly looking at how well does it perform earnings wise. Mm-hmm. And you're using valuation and multiples off of that baseline. So a lot of it is, you know, an education of getting people up to speed. But then once they're there, it's, you know, how willing they are to accept the professional across the table from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember working with a client with you saying, you know, their business is all potential. How do you value potential, right? So it's one thing to say, okay, here's your book of sales, multiply it times this, this is what your business is worth. But what do you say to somebody who says, for instance, I don't know, I'll choose a plumber for lack of a better example. How do you say to somebody who has a plumbing business in an area where there are no other plumbers, but they've only got 1/10 of the business, and you're trying to figure out what is their business really worth to another company that could bring in more people to handle a whole area? Is it a simple calculation? How do you convince a buyer and a seller that even though the business is only doing X number of dollars now, the real potential is this much and they need to pay for that?
Again, you guys are bringing up great stuff. You know, I often discuss with buyers and sellers an opportunity sale versus a cash flow sale, right? And in cash flow, I mean, you can be looking at EBITDA, you can be looking at a net or gross profit. I mean, there's so many numbers that you can value a business off of. The opportunity sale enables us to look at what the opportunity in the market is and then base a valuation off of that, where a cash flow sale is 100% off of what the earnings of the business are. So you have to decide what methodology is going to work for your client and what you're also going to be able to get from buyers.
Okay, well, we're going to come back for a second half with John Sawsville and learn more about mergers and acquisitions at all levels. But I'm going to kick it to Jess for the moment.
All right, we will have more with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, coming up next on Financial Fitness right here on WHMP.
I'm not sure if opposites attract, but most couples differ greatly in their views about household finances. I'm Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor, with Hug Your Money. Money is a very volatile topic, and most seem to either argue about it or rarely discuss it. A sort of division of labor emerges, one partner becoming the steward of household finances, the other less directly involved. This arrangement may work until a stressor is introduced: college expenses, budgeting issues, impending retirement, etc. That's when sparks can fly. Each person's perspective is quite different, and it's likely only a short-term solution, if any, will arise. The HUG plan presents an easy-to-follow, long-term solution that helps get both partners on the same page, alleviating stress and inspiring them to manage their finances successfully. I'm Frances Ray, I'm the Money Doctor. We now offer advanced tools and financial coaching using our patented system, all under one umbrella. For more information and to schedule your free consultation, visit our website at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and a very special guest. Who do we have with us?
John Sawsville, a mergers and acquisition consultant from Platform Brokerage. And John, I wanted to talk to you through the whole break, but we had to let our listeners listen in a little bit about this. So can you talk to me a little bit about the way that you work? Is it commission only? Do you charge a fee as you do this? And how is that perceived and accepted by people?
Yeah, we do work on straight commissions. So sometimes we will get hired as consultants. So I have done a good bit of consulting work. I tend to try not to. We really focus on just selling businesses. So everything's free until it closes. So it's a pretty straightforward process. The valuation is free. All the work that we do as far as marketing the business, preparing the confidential information memorandum and the financial deck. So all the preparation is free. And then at closing, we get paid our fee. So there's really little risk to putting your business up for sale, because if it doesn't sell, you don't pay a dime. Not everybody works that way, but that's what we feel is fair, and that's how we're paid.
So that's fascinating to me because it tells me a couple of important things. The first is you have to be very good at understanding what businesses are worth and whether you can sell them, or you would be doing a lot of work for free forever and be out of business by now. And the second is you said, well, there's really no risk to putting your business up for sale, which might be true for the seller, but it isn't true for you. If you're going to put forth all of this effort and energy and work and offer your expertise, you have to feel pretty solid that you're going to have a payoff at the end. And I would think that as a buyer, that's a very comfortable thing to see, to hire somebody who has skin in the game only if you get paid. So I think it's a very bold and confident way to move forward. And I just really appreciate that and admire that. Yeah. Have you ever had a big deal where you've put a lot of, or even a small deal, but where you've put a ton of effort into this, like, and you're sure it's going to happen, and then something falls apart and you just can't, not just that the buyer and the seller don't agree, but that you cannot sell the business at all. Something has really happened where, I don't know, maybe somebody lied to you and told you the business was something it wasn't, or do you remember a disaster like that you would be willing to share with us?
I do. I've had a few occasions. But if one specifically, yeah, there's a lot of work you got to do. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of risk. There's a lot of problems that can pop up. And so a lot of it is understanding where the problems are going to occur, and that my team and that I do the work up front to make sure the business is truly ready to sell. So I had a deal where we were almost ready to close. At the time, it was one of the biggest businesses I had ever sold. And this was 2 or 3 years ago. And we found out at the last minute that the seller did not understand his vendor contracts. And he had a contract in place which did not allow him to change ownership of his business. And he also, the transfer would have been unbelievably difficult.
Oh, man.
So there's a positive to the story, which is I sold that business last year.
Oh, good.
So it took several years for him to clean it up and get it to a point where it could be sold, but we sold it at a very high price for the seller as well. So it all worked out good, but it was a complete disaster, and I had wasted months and months and months of time.
I'm just curious, for potential buyers of businesses or sellers of businesses, do you find that there's a common area when deals fall apart, like maybe a top two or three things that usually go wrong? Or is it different in every case?
Bad people.
Oh, okay.
Bad people occur.
Bad people, John? Okay, bad, I'm bad sorry. People. I'm going to need a definition on bad people.
So people misrepresent how much money they have, how much access to money they have, the banking relationships they have, all of the ways that they get through and get all the information on the business. So we tend to, hold things quite tight as far as what we share with potential buyers until the buyers prove themselves that they're capable of doing the deal. So it would be people that lied in the process to me and to my team, to the sellers themselves. And then at the end, they can't fulfill their deal. Most typical problem.
Yeah, that sounds awful. I want to bring it back to the term partnerships for a moment, because it's a little scary if you're thinking of selling your business as an exit strategy, let's say, right? People get to retirement age or whatever, and they say, I've just discovered that my kids don't want this business. What am I going to do with it? And they decide to sell their business. And there's John Soswell saying, but well, I'm not looking for a buyer. I'm looking for a partner. My first thing would be, for how long? What kind of partner? John, I'm not trying to buy my business back here. What do you say to them?
What it is, it is terminology, right? It isn't their actual partner, because many people never wanted a business partner, and that's why they ran their business by themselves. So it is a partnership, though. So it's a scary word. It's a scary thing selling your business, but it's part of the process, unfortunately, is the two people, the closer they are, the better they get along, the more they enjoy their partnership, the better the transaction is going to go, the better the post-sale is going to go. So to me, it's the most important thing. It is a scary word, but I use it so people understand the closeness of the relationship they're going to have between buyer and seller.
During that process, after the sale, maybe for a limited time, they're partners, but eventually the seller gets to walk away.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
Yeah. At the end of the day, everybody wants to walk away clean. right? Yes. So, and honestly, the better the business it is, the cleaner the walk away, right? The more complicated, you know, lack of contracts with your clients, stuff like that, you're going to have more terms. And terms tends to mean carrying a note for the buyer or an earnout structure, but some way that some of the money is still going to be paid over time. So in that way, the partnership lasts as long as that money is owed.
Fair enough.
I was just curious if you've had a situation where you might have multiple buyers interested and you recommend a lower price because it's going to be a better partner.
Oh, great question.
That is a great question. And it's something I had never done until last year. Because I continue as I mature as a M&A advisor, I realize the importance of the partnership. Mm-hmm. So I tend to look for the two people that are going to work together better over time and emphasize that aspect of the business. So I have told people this person is offering a little bit less, but you're probably going to be happier in the long run.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm thinking for the people listening that aren't entrepreneurs or don't run a business or want to sell a business, but they could still relate to this. If you've ever bought a house or a car from somebody who was difficult to work with and you came away feeling like you paid too much, you got a bad deal, whatever, everybody's miserable at the closing table, or they're miserable looking for how they can get their lemon law or go after the dealer for the problems that they have. And it sounds to me like I wish that there was more of a partnership idea during that process, as you describe it, when people are buying a home or buying a car. Look, you know, I mean, I just bought a car from a private seller, and I bought the car partly from him, even though there was another one that was similar, because I felt like this guy was being straight with me. This guy was somebody I liked. I felt like he treated the car well. I wanted to buy that car. And it, you know, we worked out the terms and that was fine. And the other car may have been fine, but you know, I think the guy was not telling me the truth about it. And so it didn't matter what the numbers were. I didn't feel right buying that car. And is it the same thing for buyers when they're looking at businesses? How do they kick the tires?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is through those conversations and through the meetings and really getting to know the person. Because just like you related it to a car sale, it's so much about trust. It is about what person you trust. Do you trust what they're saying? Do you trust what they built? And do you trust that the dream of the future? So like anything, trust is massively important in this process. And so you have to feel that at the end of the day that you trust the other person, both buyer and seller.
Do you recommend that everybody put everything into writing? Like, I'm just thinking about, you know, if I was selling a business, I'd care about what was going to happen to my employees. And the new employer can tell you, I'm not going to make any changes. I'm not going to let anybody go. Can you put into writing, like, you're going to keep those employees for at least 90 days? Or can you put in precautions so the business is going in the direction you were hoping?
You definitely can. So the, you know, outside of the partnership, the next most important thing is the terms of the deal, mm-hmm. right? Everybody thinks about money. Everybody thinks about what is that dollar amount you're going to talk to your friends about. It's not the most important thing. It's, do you have a good partner? Do you have the terms that you want in the deal? And then the price. Mm-hmm. So, and part of those terms would include what's going to happen with employees, the structure of an earnout or a carry. Really, every single aspect of the business can be documented. And, you know, I mean, certain people get to very fine details with their lawyers.
Mm-hmm. Or the layman, can you define layout and earn out and carry?
Oh, yeah. So an earn out is, so a carry is a loan from that the seller is giving to the buyer as part of the purchase. So they're buying the business for $1 million. There's a $500,000 carry. So that means there's a $500,000 note that the buyer owes the seller after the sale. And earnout is a similar structure, but it's also judged by the performance of the business. So it's saying, we're going to pay you over a period of time, but you're going to earn that based on the performance of the business. So the business made $1 million last year. This year, it needs to make $1 million to get the full earnout.
Yeah, similar to somebody holding back paper on a house that you're buying or...
Exactly.
Yeah, having a trail commission, if you will, or something, but tied to the value of the business going forward. So it's very interesting. Do you have maybe a story about a favorite business you sold? Do you have a favorite deal?
I come from the tech industry historically. So I've run multiple types of businesses. We sell multiple types of businesses at this point. But I've sold some big tech businesses, which obviously I get paid more the bigger the business is. So those kind of stand out in my mind. But also it was an opportunity sale. It was something that was very undefined as far as what it was worth. It was one of the most difficult things I've ever had to sell, but I had a big success. And so we were able to get exactly what I predicted we would get. And the sellers were phenomenally happy. Things didn't work out perfectly, but the sellers got their business back. And so they got paid a whole lot of money to end up with a better business than they started with. So that's a pretty happy group of sellers.
You didn't sell Barstool Sports, did you?
No.
He ended up buying it back for $1 after selling it. That's why I thought of that.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay, John. So first of all, I really want to thank you for coming and joining us today. It's an unusual topic. And I just want to ask, do you have one piece of advice you would give somebody who thinks they might be wanting to sell their business? What would you tell them?
I have two bits of advice. One is find somebody to help them sell their business that understands their industry, that has specific expertise in the industry they're working on. Most brokers sell businesses in some area or another, and they have that area of expertise that they're best in. Find the guy that they're best in your industry and work with them. Second, find somebody you really, really like and enjoy working with. You enjoy your conversations during the acquisition process. You trust them as a buyer and you believe that they've been successful in life. Those are the biggest things, is a good partner and a broker that knows the industry. It's going to go a long way.
In parlance, good people.
There you go.
Good people. So thank you again. This is John Sosville from Platform Brokerage. He's a mergers and acquisitions consultant, and I hope you'll come back for another show sometime and we can talk more about this.
I would love to. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
This was a lot of fun. All right. Before we go, I want to get your number, Francis.
Sure. They can reach us at 413-773-3333 or, of course, on the web at hugyourmoney.com.
Also want to mention that if you've got a question for the Money Doctor, you can send it to info@hugyourmoney.com or to jtyler@whmp.com. If we use your question on the air, you will get a copy of The Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Rahm's book, available now. Join us next Saturday right here on WHMP for an all-new Financial Fitness with The Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Rahm.
101.5, 1400 WHMP, news, information, and the arts. Emotions and experiences play an important role in our financial decision-making. Every Saturday morning, hear real-life stories and positive solutions to issues we all face when it comes to our relationship with money. Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Francis Rahm. Saturday mornings at 8:30 on 101.5, 1400 WHMP.
Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to GetTheTea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's GetTheTea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. GetTheTea.com, code TEA123. Order today. This is Francis Rahm, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
I think it's giving people tools, putting things together in an accessible, easy-to-understand way that allows people to think for themselves, to think about what they want to do. It's that old adage about, do you give people fish or do you teach them how to fish? Hug Your Money is clearly in the you teach them how to fish category. And I think it helps give people confidence that they can tackle these things with an outside perspective that helps set them on the right road. She sort of wagged her finger at us a little bit when we talked about doing some things. And that was fine. I needed that. We really both needed that.
We did.
And I certainly would recommend Hug Your Money to others out there if you're trying to look out after your own future.
Hug works best when we work together. Visit hugyourmoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Raham.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Heller, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Raham. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am doing okay. Someone's on vacation, so I feel like I'm a little frazzled this week, but, you know, I'm glad they're getting away.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, we just finished a big vacation weekend, so I want to talk a little bit about, after hearing some complaints from people about, oh, I spent too much and gas prices are huge. And do you know what it cost me to rent a car? So, you know, vacation should be about enjoyment, not about worrying about the money. So
that is true. But I do know a lot of people that like go on vacation, spend whatever they want and just say, I'll worry about it later. And then that part's not so great.
Yeah, that's pretty much most people, don't you think?
Yeah.
I think that's what the point of taking a vacation is, to get away from all of that. And so it's easy to throw caution to the wind. But I'm going to talk today about some things that you can do to save money in ways that don't cramp your style, so you can actually enjoy the vacation and use that money you saved for other things. Maybe it's a great experience, or maybe it's paying your bills when you get home, whatever it is. Let's not waste money in places where we don't get any enjoyment out of it when we're on vacation.
Okay, sounds good.
So some of this will be about foreign travel, what happens if you're going abroad, and some of it will pertain to everything. And who knows what we'll end up talking about. But the first thing that comes to mind is something called peak end performance. Now, when you're making a vacation plan, especially if you're bringing your children and you're going to someplace exotic or someplace that you think, okay, we have to go now because the kids are aging and we will never have this opportunity again.
Yeah.
And you tend to load up almost every day with all the experiences you possibly can. You know, we're going to go to Disney today. We're going to go to Epcot tomorrow. We're going to go to Busch Gardens next day, whatever it happens to be. Okay. There is something called peak end performance. And it's a sports term as well, but it's used in this way to make sure that you're getting the most bang for your buck. In other words, what will you remember when you come home from vacation? Will you remember every experience you had 3 years later? It's not likely. But what you will remember is what you did at the peak. What was the pinnacle of your vacation? Were you going to go on a safari and, you know, shoot pictures of a giraffe? Was that the big deal for you on that trip? And what did you do right at the end? Believe it or not, just before you get on the plane, that's what you remember. I can remember personally being in Venice, Italy, and I wasn't there for very long at that time. And the vacation was okay. But I remember two things. I remember losing my favorite pair of lingerie at the hotel and not being able to get it back, oddly enough, because it was really a favorite. And I remember the experience just before we left. There was Acqua Alta, which is the moon is full and the water comes up too high in Venice. And you can't get onto the boats, right? They don't come in. And so this guy in a cigar boat came flying into the rescue, like in the movies, right? With all the guys on the gondolas, you know, cheering him in. And then we got on this boat and zipped over to the airport. And so believe it or not, that leaving experience is one of my favorite memories of Venice, despite the fact that I saw lots of beautiful things in Venice. So if you want bang for your buck, try and do a bunch of things that you like, but aren't hugely expensive, and maybe cut corners somewhere else, but pick one peak performance and one end performance. And those will be the big things, the things that you spend the most money on, because that's what people will remember 3, 4, 5 years.
It is really hard going on vacation. Like, we go to Florida every year and you just notice the prices inching up more and more and more. One trick that we do is, you know, my sister's got a timeshare, so we can use that. But for anybody else, like getting a hotel room with a kitchen or kitchenette, so you don't have to do every single meal out, because it just, that kills you with the budget.
Yeah, it really does. And even when you're on vacation and you're eating out, one of the tips is to try to eat like a local would, right? Don't go to the place with the incredible view of the Eiffel Tower, because you're going to pay for that view. And you can go see the Eiffel Tower separately. Try to find a restaurant that's a little out of the way. Ask some locals, where's a good local place to eat? Doesn't have to be fancy, but we want really great food. And again, maybe you spend one really expensive dinner out somewhere, if that's your peak or your end memory. And the rest of the time, you do what you're saying. You either try to eat like a local inexpensively, or you try to get something where you have some way to cook at the facility, or that you at least have a refrigerator. Like if I stay in a hotel, the first thing I ask for is, can you make sure there's a little refrigerator in my room? Because I could never eat all the meal, right? So I always get a to-go box right away, stick it in the fridge, and then, you know, you have another meal for lunch or dinner or whatever. So that's one of the good things. So if you're traveling abroad, the first thing to remember is, I don't want you to pay those foreign transaction fees. They're 3%, right?
Okay, so how do you avoid that?
So you can avoid it by, first of all, checking the exchange rates before you leave. So you can do that at different websites. There's a site called xe.com that you can check your exchange rates at. And if the exchange rate is good here in the U.S., exchange money before you go. And we'll talk a little bit about how to get a good deal on exchange rates. But definitely do that. Use a bank-branded ATM. Don't go to a little kiosk in Europe and try and get money out of it, because you're going to spend more than you would if you went to a bank chain ATM. And avoid exchanging your money at an airport or a tourist site. Those are the most
A lot of people do that, because they forget, and then they think, oh, I'll just do it right there.
So, you know, a little bit of a walk to out of the way somewhere, you'll get a better exchange rate if you have to exchange in the foreign country. But try and exchange money before you go. Now, when you're exchanging money, if you do it in large bills or you do it with a group, you can sometimes get a better rate. So if you're traveling with a group, don't go up individually and exchange your money. Have a little conversation off to the side. Decide on how much money you'd each like to exchange. Try and make it the same amount to make the math easy when you come back with the exchanged currency. And then go and exchange your money, because you'll get a better rate with larger bills or with more money. So don't exchange $5 bills. Exchange 20s, 50s, 100s. Right?
Okay.
Or exchange it in a group. Bring it as a group and do that. Now, when you come home, please don't bring home a bunch of foreign exchange, you know, foreign currency, because the banks here aren't going to exchange it for you. Try and minimize that. Spend whatever you're going to spend over there. Don't spend it just because you have it. Because guess what? Most of the airports have a kiosk where you can donate that foreign currency to charity. So at least, If it's just going to go to waste in your sock drawer, at least, you know, donate it to charity. So, you know, try and avoid that. It's just complete waste to spend that. Oh, there's one more thing. When you're checking out, a lot of the cashiers, the systems will allow you to choose whether you want to pay in a U.S. dollar or the local currency. Always pay in the local currency, because if you don't, you're going to pay an exchange rate. That's inflated, because you're at a restaurant or you're someplace where they know they've got you. So they charge you a higher exchange rate. If you pay in the U.S. dollar, even though that has to be exchanged, it's your local bank that you bank with that is making the decision about what that exchange rate is. And it's probably in your favor rather than, you know, paying the extra exchange rate because you paid in U.S. dollars at the restaurant.
So do you think that you're better off, because I think it's always hard when you're going to go on vacation and you have to do an exchange rate, of figuring out exactly how much money you're going to need. So do you think it's better to get more than you need and then have to do the exchange thing you said on the way back? Or is it better to get a little bit less and maybe pay a higher rate to get the exchange at some smaller place, like you were saying?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, that's like timing the market. How are you going to do that properly? So you want to bring some cash, you know, some minimal cash for when you need it, and some credit card or debit card. And one of the things you can do if you're worried about overspending is you can get a prepaid travel card that you can load with any kind of currency. So that might help you to feel more secure and to say, okay, I've loaded it with this much currency. I'm okay. I don't have to use it all, but it's on this travel card, so it's not all cash. I'm not worried about getting robbed and having my cash on hand. But, you know, I think it's probably better to, obviously it's better to plan it perfectly, but none of us will, right? But I think it's better to maybe have a little extra You know, you can probably afford to get a little extra at our exchange rates rather than pay for it over there. But if you get trapped, just go someplace local, away from the airport, away from the tourist traps, and exchange some currency there. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
Okay. So what happens if you're traveling at home, or you're, even if you are abroad, what about some packing tips? Now, what is the money doctor doing talking about packing tips? I haven't run completely amok where I must tell you how to do everything in your life, but there are some things about packing that will save you money, lots of money. And remember, we said this is about ways to curb your spending in places that don't cramp your style. Okay.
Is one of them the weight limit on your suitcase?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It is. It is. And it starts with your suitcase. Mm-hmm. You know, if you like to buy the gorgeous leather, hand-tooled, beautiful suitcase, you're going to pay for it, not just when you buy it, over and over and over again every time you travel. That can add up to 8 pounds over a lightweight suitcase before you ever put an item in it. Yeah. So try to buy a lightweight suitcase if you can. Then try and buy a checkable size so that you don't have to check your bags for airlines that are charging for them. And most airlines are now charging, you know, $25 a bag each way or whatever. By the time you get done with a family, you could have bought another ticket at least. Mm-hmm. So that gets trickier as the airlines get fussier about what you can travel with. I recently bought, maybe a couple of years ago, actually, now I bought a suitcase from IT Luggage. It's not that I'm doing a commercial for IT, but they're the only ones I could find that had this size. It's like a train case size. Do you know that size? It's slightly smaller than, so the airlines and the luggage people say this is a carry-on, but it only fits on some airlines, like on the budget airlines, like Breeze or Spirit or whatever. It won't fit. They won't take it under your seat. But this little cube thing is just a couple of inches smaller. I forget the exact measurements. It might be 17 inches or 16 inches or something like that. But it's hard shell. You can pack a ton of stuff in it, and it fits right under their seat. And so you don't have to check a bag. You can save money. Now, what do you do if, like me, you're going to Italy for 10 days and you've got that little cube and you like clothes? What are you going to do about it? You're going to roll your clothes up rather than pack them, rather than fold them, I mean. And use those, you know, those dorky little things you see on TV called space bags.
Is it where it like suctions all the air out?
Yes. Get some space bags. They're cheap. And try and get the ones that you can just lie on until you flatten them out. I'm sure I'm giving these real graphic images to our listeners, but literally I will roll my clothes up, put them in the space bag, lie on them on the bed, like on my stomach or something, until I've squeezed almost all the air out of it, zip the little zipper stuck. And because they're flat like a little brick, you can put so much stuff in your suitcase. And you can even leave room for things that you buy when you're away to get back in.
I was going to say, that is where I always go wrong. Like, I'll always bring the carry-on because the same thing. I think I can buy something if I need it, but I'm not paying the extra fee. But then you get wherever you're going and you're going to get stuff to bring home to people. So then it's a whole other thing trying to get the stuff back.
It is. Sometimes people are going specifically for shopping. And so they'll pack a suitcase inside a suitcase so that they have a complete empty suitcase, but then they have to pay to bring it back. And you just have to weigh, is it cheaper to ship the stuff or buy it at home or bring it in your suitcase back? So lots of things you can save money on. And I think we're probably at break, right?
Yeah, we are.
So lots of things that you can save money on, and we'll talk more about it. But I just don't want people to be worried about the money while they're on vacation. And I really don't want them to come home feeling like they overspent. Instead, let's just trim some things that don't matter and move on.
Okay, we'll have more coming up. But first, I want to get your phone number.
Sure, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be right back with more with Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP. Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Heller, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and we're talking about one of my favorite things, vacation.
Yeah, mine too. I don't get many of them, but boy, when I do, I really want to make it count, you know. So one of the things people have complained about a lot lately to me is the cost of a rental car. I can't believe
it. Yeah, it's gone way up. I was looking for Florida for coming up in November, and it's unbelievable how expensive it is.
Yeah, I mean, it really adds something to your fare. And, you know, I'm going to gripe just for a moment about how much I miss a good travel agent. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to, this is a pet peeve of mine, that we now are forced to do things on our own and pay more for it. Like that sign. That sign about it's $25 if I do it, if you watch, it's 50, right? You know, you go to the grocery store now, you pack your own groceries most of the time, check out your own stuff. Half the time, the scanners don't work. Do you get a discount? No. You know, prices keep going up. Well, same thing is true for travel. It used to be great. In fact, I'm kind of surprised that we got rid of travel agents mostly. I don't know of a travel agent anymore. Do you?
Do you know anybody? No, I really don't. I mean, I see some travel sites, so I'm assuming people work there, but I don't know anybody that calls a travel agent to book a vacation now. They do it themselves.
Yeah, if there's a travel agent listening to this show, call me, please. I'd like to talk to you, and I would love to. They'd be an interesting guest to have on the show, too. But also, I think that's a service that we undervalued, and now, you know, you do it yourself. It takes you forever. You're not sure if you got the right rates. And I remember in that trip to Italy I was talking about, I think the first time I went, I used a travel agency sort of thing. It was like a group agency. And so I got group rates on some things, but I didn't have to go on everything they had. And that still exists. You can find places that will offer you group rates for the tickets that you might want to use to go to the Colosseum or someplace. But you don't have to take the bus tour if you don't want to, or you don't have to do the flights, but you can get a deal on the hotels because they're using power of a group. And the same thing is true about group discounts like AAA or Costco or BJ's, where you might get a discount because you're part of a bigger organization. And so you might get a discount there. Some of that does pertain to rental cars. Sometimes you can get a discount on a rental car. But there are some other things you need to do to trim your expenses on rental cars. The first is avoid the prepaid gas. You know, fill up the car and bring it back full. Don't let them charge you $5 a gallon when you bring it back. It's
a
just
lot
such
of people do it because they know they're going to forget. You know what I mean? They know that they're going to forget, and it's just for convenience. Everything that's convenient is more.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. In fact, that's true of the insurance also on the rental cars. So, you know, they always ask you, do you want the insurance? And sometimes they're a little pushy, like, well, if you don't have the insurance and you get into an accident or you injure somebody. So here's a big thing you can do before you ever leave for vacation. Weeks in advance, call your insurance agent and find out, hey, if I rent a car and I hit somebody, what am I covered for? Will it pay for the accident to the car, you know, the damage to the car? Will it pay if I hit somebody and injure them? And they might have you might have a personal policy that covers you for liability as well. Even your credit card company that you use to rent the car may give you that insurance for free. So that's one of the things you can do is if you have several credit cards, you can figure out, well, which one am I going to use to rent the car because I get the perk of the insurance? And then you can feel comfortable declining the insurance. I never recommend that you just go not covered, right? Mm-hmm. But you can, there are things you can do. In fact, if you don't have insurance at all, or if you don't have comprehensive, you can ask for something called a loss damage waiver, which protects you. It limits your liability of responsibility if there's an accident. And you can check your personal policy to see if you're covered for liability. So don't avoid the expensive insurance if you can find that you're covered another way on a rental car. Even that contactless pickup, you know, where you get your keys out of a little kiosk or an app unlocks your car. Sometimes that is a money saver for people just because they didn't have to encounter somebody who was selling them on extras. Right. Mm-hmm. So you make all your decisions when it's calm. This is like my tip about shopping where I say, give it a ride in your cart and go to the back of the store where nobody's bothering you and make your decisions. Same thing with contactless pickup. Yeah. Oh, two more things, I think, Jess. Shop many sites. You know, that almost goes without saying, but sometimes people say, I always rent Budget. I always rent whatever, Avis.
Yeah.
So shop several sites for the best price and try to be flexible. If you can change the time that you pick up the car, even by a half an hour. Just try it out on the web. What happens if I pick it up at 3? What happens if I pick it up at 3:30? And you may find a better price by shifting a half an hour's time, which really isn't much.
Another little thing I'll add, just a little personal tip, is if you have kids and you're going and you're going to rent a car, it's almost cheaper to either pay the extra fee to bring the booster seat, or, I mean, if they're booster seat size, or just run to Walmart, get a booster seat for $19, because otherwise, by the time you're done renting the car, it's like an extra $150 for the booster seats.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's something I've learned.
Not having children, I didn't know that cost, but I do know somebody with a granddaughter, and they travel back and forth from North Carolina quite a bit, and they shipped up a separate seat. It paid for them to ship it up just to stay at the grandpa's house so that when they're here, they have a car seat. It's not even a booster seat. It's a regular car seat. But
they add all those fees onto the rental, and it just jacks up the price. You're like, what? Where is this from? And then you see it's the car seat. They charge you like a daily fee for it, for each one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anything like that that you can minimize. You know, when you're traveling and you're using your cell phone, again, before you go, before you're where you're having to make this knee-jerk decision, ask your provider, do they provide free data when you're abroad? You know, can you get, or if not, get a local SIM card when you're over there to use the data. Don't just rack up these ridiculous cellular data roaming charges, because they can be enormous. I remember one time I went to Canada and I had arranged this before I went. Oh, and check your bill when you come home. Let me say that. That bears repeating. So I arranged it all, as you might imagine, before I went. And when I came home, I reassimilated into life and went on with my daily chores. And one day my cell phone bill came in, and it was something like $348. And it was usually like $50, you know. And I called them up and I said, but wait, I arranged this. Oh, we don't have anything in our records. I had to really squawk. I had to know who I talked to. I had written it down, what time, plan on it. Another thing, talking about, you know, planning on things like that, that you have to pay attention to and be vigilant of, sadly, that you have to be your own steward and fight for yourself all the time now, but we're in a litigious society, I think, is the rental car. When you pick up your rental car, you will thank me one day for this tip. I promise you will. When you pick up your rental car, I don't care how nice the guy is that walks around it, or the woman walks around it and says there's a scratch here and a ding there. You take pictures of the outside and the inside of your car. If it has to be one video, fine, walk around it, take pictures of the inside, because if you bring it back and they say this wasn't here, you don't have any way of proving it other than that. You know, maybe you missed it when you were doing the once over. Maybe you did a contactless pickup, right? Like we were talking about. There's nobody there to go over it and say there was a ding here or a scratch there. So before you leave the parking lot, take pictures of it, video if you have to. You know, I was just thinking about other generic things that you can save money on in your vacation. You know, being flexible is one of them, of course. If you can change your time a little bit here or there, or a day a little bit here or there, you might save some money. But try and travel on low season or off season if you can. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be going to the beach in the middle of the winter, but you might be going in May rather than June, July, August, or you might be going in September. And because you're off that peak season, you'll save yourself a pile of money. And the same is true if you're going someplace like a, you know, a ski resort or something like that. Rather than staying in the highest priced city that's right there at the edge of the mountain, you know, look for other places that might have ski in, ski out, you know, facilities, but they're maybe not, you know, in the middle of whatever, in the middle of the hottest city that you want to go to, right? They're not in Vail necessarily. They're maybe slightly out of there. So, so just think about that, or maybe even you go to another country. So instead of maybe going, if you're thinking of, let's say, a European vacation, right? Maybe you go to Slovenia instead of someplace else that, you know, might be higher priced.
The other thing that I've been doing is using Turo. I don't know if you know that, where you're renting someone else's car. The only thing you've got to be careful with is, for me, it's like making sure that you put on the button that says free airport pickup and drop off. Otherwise, you have to kind of go off site. But I've been able to save money that way too, because the car rental prices are so expensive.
You know, that brings me to an idea that I had not even thought to talk about today, but I've done it. There are house swapping thing. So if you have a timeshare, like you can swap it with somebody else's timeshare, you can do it with houses as well. So if
it
you
was
have
a whole
vacation,
Kate Winslet movie. Did you not see the movie?
Oh, that's right.
Yes. Yeah.
I forgot. That was a good movie, actually. I forgot
it
about
it was.
That.
So there might be a cute guy involved. You don't know.
Yeah, he was a cute guy. Both of them. So anyway, but wait, I digress. Okay. So yes, you can do that. You can swap your house. So you might have a house in Vermont. You can swap it with somebody for a week in Spain or whatever. Speaking of Spain and European countries, some cities in things, well, not that they're all European, but some larger cities like Japan or Portugal or Croatia will allow you to use Wi-Fi for free everywhere you go. So you get like free hotspots everywhere. So, you know, you can factor in those kinds of things when you're trying to decide on where you want to vacation and how you want to do it. But I think probably just planning ahead instead of making knee-jerk decisions while you're away, you know, make sure you have enough money, make sure you exchange it at the right rate, make sure you planned out your packing, make a list so you're not forgetting a bunch of things, and spend that time while you're building up to your vacation on the enjoyment of planning for it. I hate to say this because, you know, I don't tell people, hey, go shopping. But that lightweight suitcase, especially if you buy it at a bargain store, can save you a lot of money over the years in packing and save your back as well. You know, and if you get that little cube thing that fits under the seat like I did, man, I used it so much. Everybody that sees one wants one. And they're all like, where'd you get that? They're hard to find, but they do exist. So, yeah.
I like the idea too that, like, you know, you're not saying when you go on vacation, make sure that you've budgeted a certain amount per day, because you're right. Most people are going to go and be like, look, I've worked hard all year. This is my time to really enjoy. So, you know, it's nice to still be able to enjoy, but here's some tips for saving some money while you're doing it.
Well, that's the point. I want you to spend money on the things you will remember and you love. They don't, for instance, who goes to the airport and says, wow, that was really great that I overpaid in that short-term garage parking lot and I didn't get to go out to dinner because of it, right?
Right.
Nobody does that. So prepay your airport parking. You know, you might even, maybe valet parking sounds expensive to you and you think, well, I'll just park in the garage and I'll walk over there. It's probably the other way around. The valet parking is probably least expensive and you can get deals on it and they're so competitive. So if you get it ahead of time, rather than like driving to the airport and saying, where am I going to park? I got to park in this lot because I'm running late and it's more expensive, but I'll deal with it when I come back. Get a coupon ahead of time, prepay it, you know, get in their little van and off you go.
And the other thing that I do too, is if you're going with other family members or a big family, we carpool, because otherwise you're paying for two people at the parking lot and it's a couple hundred bucks by the time you get back.
Yeah.
So
there's no
all
doubt.
Really good tips. Now I want to go on vacation.
Well, I just have one last thing when you said if you're going with other people, and this is where I'm going to say, you know, I'm the little person on your shoulder here saying, don't let yourself get boxed in. Don't let yourself get goaded into spending more money because the other people you're on vacation with can do it. If it's not affordable for you, there's no shame in saying, look, you know, I want to go do that, but really, I think I'm just going to do this other thing instead. Or just flat out say, you know, we don't have the same amount of money to draw on. So I don't want to stop you from doing it, but just know that I don't want to come home to a pile of debt. And I'm sure you don't want that for me either. So I'm going to find some things I can do while you're doing that.
That's such a good point. We've talked about before having my sister in, because I bring her up a lot, but when we go on vacation, she likes to go out or do our meals like one meal a day. So it's either, she doesn't like to spend money at restaurants. And that's true. Like, she's like, go ahead if you want to do it, but she doesn't want to be forced into spending that money every night. And that's true. People have different ideas of what they want to do on vacation.
Yeah. And it's really hard to know that, especially if you don't discuss it in the beginning when you're planning the vacation. You know, somebody says, hey, I'm going to go to, and would you like to go? And you say, yeah, okay. And then you feel obligated. And so then there's a plane ticket and, you know, all the expenses that happen after that. You really do have to speak up for yourself and just say, I want to go on vacation, but I don't want to spend the next 3 years paying for it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's get your phone number if anybody has any questions.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. All info is available up there as well. We'll talk to you again next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Jess.
Financial Fitness is back again next week with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today.